Right or wrong, that's the kind of family I grew up in. The place I grew up in. I didn't know anything but what my family told me, and my friends' families told them. It's not an excuse. Just the way of things. Ugly things. Shameful things. The weight and colors and convictions of our family history. Many said we had a tradition to uphold, and we'd do it or we'd die trying. The air was hot, and the sun had bleached all the colors but red out of the Mississippi mud, when I found the first black boy somebody had carved up in the thick of the woods behind our neighbor's house. My tongue felt as if it stuck to the roof of my mouth that July 3rd in 1960. And I hate to admit that I was more intrigued than I was frightened. I hate to admit that I stared for a long time on that body before running home to get my father. He brought out others, all of them talking quietly as they investigated, taking pictures of the tracks in the riverbank and the dark soil of the delta, the kid laying there in his ruined flesh with dead, white eyes. I knew him, which may have made it harder, but it didn't feel like it at the time. Death, even violent death, was a way of life, and my father and his family were violent men. J.T. Long loaded Smash and Crash into the back of his horse trailer. He had a full thermos of coffee from the latest No-Tell Motel in Minot, North Dakota, and he was ready for the 7-hour drive to Brainerd. It would be his last rodeo, or at least the last one he was going to travel to. He might help out locally once he got the farm settled, but he'd had enough adrenaline pumping through his veins for 1,000 lifetimes. The injuries, late nights, and buckle bunnies had lost their shine in the last couple of years. Rodeo had given and taken everything from him. Well, his dumbass reaction to the circuit cost was to blame, too. "We about ready?" Sunshine Parker yawned from the passenger seat. His blonde hair stuck out from the bottom of his baseball cap as he curled into a ball with his journal held close like a teddy bear. "Oh, I didn't mean to wake you by loading horses, gear, and everything else into the vehicle," J.T. chided. "Yeah, but you didn't load me. Walked here and buckled up with minimal prodding." "And by minimal, you mean I didn't have to throw a bucket of ice on you this morning." "See? Minimal." "I think it's best if I start by telling you about the day I met the devil outside a saloon in Nebraska. I stepped out of the musty drinking hole, my eyes adjusting to the white midday sky. I clipped my watch shut and dropped it back inside my jacket. I had a 3-day shadow on my face, and I was exhausted. Still sober, though, and that was a start for now. I squinted down the high street, left, then right. Not a soul. I shivered. My hand fell to my side out of habit and rested on my gun. Across the street, above the store, a shutter slammed shut. There was a time when I'd have done the same, back when I was just another ordinary man, before I knew the truth of the world. I patted my left chest pocket, felt the bulge and clink of bullets, comforting. Not as comforting as 2 pockets full, but there was no more time. There was no fanfare, no cloud of dust, and no clap of thunder. When I first met the devil himself, he was just sitting on the saloon porch behind me. Been there all along, I guess, watching me check my gun and ammo. If he saw me flinch at all, he was polite enough not to show it. And isn't that just a hoot? "Marvelous day for a matrimony, wouldn't you say, Chief?" He wore a white fitted tuxedo and dabbed at his moist forehead with a black silken rag. I grimaced at the sound of his voice. It wasn't raspy or evil like you'd expect, and the tone was pleasant enough. But it was wrong all the way to the end of the dial. "Pierce Slake, delighted to meet you.